Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
So, Adam, I want to start with Bondi because this has been what's pissing me off this week. I don't think I've ever seen a more disturbing and disgusting display of a powerful individual treating such a serious issue with no respect for the victims, no respect for the crime, just such immaturity. I don't know how else to describe it. And I want to get your reaction to what Bondi did in front of the House Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, so she did a similar testimony in October where she quite literally just read off of a script a bunch of ad hominem insults towards every single Democrat that was there. This one was a bit different, like in a sense that she slowed down. She was talking a little bit slower, but still being completely disrespectful and honestly a jackass. There was a really great moment where Representative Pramila Jayapal had the survivors stand up and identify themselves. And after Pam Bondi said that anyone had access to the DOJ to ask any questions, Jayapal asks, raise your hand if you haven't had access to the DOJ, if you haven't been able to ask them questions or communicate with them. And they all raised their hands in unison. So Pam Bondi kind of exposed herself right there as not only blocking the survivors, the victims from being able to access the DOJ, but just being a liar on the stand. There was clearly a performance for an audience of one happening where Donald Trump was watching, Pam Bondi was trying to play to him. But even beyond that, I think that it's interesting. I saw an ad from Pam Bondi when she was running for the Florida Attorney General, and her entire campaign was based off of sexual abuse of children and stopping child predators. And that was her whole thing. That was going to be her legacy before Trump took office. So I can imagine a reality where, just like a reality where Marco Rubio used to be very pro-NATO, pro-democracy, and now he kind of talks a different tune, even though he believes something else. I can imagine a reality where Pam Bondi probably did actually try to fight child sex traffickers a decade or two back when she was running. And now she's completely beholden to the swamp. She has become the swamp. She is covering up for the Epstein class. And it's very, very sickening to see. I want to get your opinion. And then I also want to talk a little bit about the surveillance of Representative Pramila Jayapal, because did you see the photo where she's holding up a list?
I did, yeah.
The search history in the Epstein terminal. They were tracking the file. It's insane. It's insane.
Yeah. So, you know, Pam Bondi's conduct was completely unbecoming and disgusting to me, because I think it's just really important when we talk about the Epstein cover-up and when we talk about these crimes, is they're treating these people with such disrespect. But every single day, you have 1,000 little girls and boys who have been abused, who are just trying to get some attention and accountability and some justice from their own government. And their government could not be more disrespectful to them. And that spans, in my opinion, multiple administrations, because I don't think this is a partisan issue. I question what Biden's DOJ was doing with these files. I question what Trump's DOJ is doing now with this information as they keep covering it up. And it's really, it's sickening. I don't know what else, other word to describe. It's just really sickening. On the burn book with Pam Bondi and then her surveilling on the Democratic members, I thought that was also an extreme violation of the relationship between the executive branch and the DOJ and Congress. Like, Congress passed a law to require the DOJ to give them access to these files, to have them released to the public, which they have still not fully done. They're claiming, even with the files that they let Pramila Jayapal and Jamie Raskin and Thomas Massie and the rest of them look at, they're claiming they're fully unredacted. They're still 70-80% blacked out. Because all that they did, this is according to Ro Khanna, was they took the files from the FBI, and the FBI blacked out 70% of them, sent them to the DOJ, and then they uploaded them to four computers that members of Congress have access to. So everything about this is so disturbing. And what are they covering up? Because what we know is beyond the pale of the abuse of little kids and the accusations of now murder and violence. But I worry about what else is in there. And they're not just covering up, you know, they claim they're covering up like child pornography, and they claim they're covering up victims' information. But no, they're covering up the names of the perpetrators of these crimes. And Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie have been calling them out over and over and over again. They've had to unredact a couple ones, like the one about the member of the royal family in Saudi Arabia who's being punished right now. So it's just, I don't understand what our government is doing right now, except for protecting pedophiles. Like, that's all that it is.
it is an inverse of reality when they are forgetting, quote unquote, forgetting to redact the names of victims and over redacting the names of the perpetrators.
Correct.
All while doing this, they are surveilling the American people in multiple ways. I mean, it's important to remember 1 year ago, Elon Musk and his Doge goons were raiding the Social Security Administration and other buildings and gathering data about American citizens. This has been proven. Over the past year, Palantir has been building a larger and larger surveillance state that goes from the bottom of the most vulnerable Americans who need some sort of health care or Medicare or Medicaid to the very top, our representatives, like Representative Pramila Jayapal, who yesterday did a bunch of interviews saying they are spying on our logs in the Epstein terminals. Even Republican Representative Nancy Mace said that she knows they have been spying on everything she does in these Epstein file terminals that they log into because they give them the passcode. So think about how 1984-esque this is. Pam Bondi is the one who gives them the passcode. They log in, but under the surveillance of Big Brother Pam Bondi, and nobody is safe. They are probably also surveilling what we look up about the Epstein files. And it's because
100%.
This government wants to cover up for the Epstein class. I think that's a really, really great, just messaging-wise, when John Ossoff, and was it Ro Khanna that coined that? I can't remember.
Yeah, Ro Khanna's first time I heard it, I feel like John Ossoff popularized it. With
It's been getting bigger and bigger. I mean, Ro Khanna definitely cooked with that one, and it's true. It really shows the divide between people in power, mainly men, but also some women, who aren't held accountable oftentimes versus the rest of Americans who probably could get caught speeding and have larger consequences than most people who went to Epstein's Island.
Like, right.
If you're living paycheck to paycheck and you get caught speeding and that's $600, you're cooked, you're behind, you're screwed, you're bound on food. That like ruins your life. Now, if you're a billionaire who gets caught in the Epstein files, just hire a PR firm and don't talk about it.
Well, and think about like all these people who get caught up in like a three strikes law that the Republicans love to talk about, where you do, you know, three relatively minor crimes and suddenly you're a felon and you can't vote for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
So the way this system works is it's very punitive to people who commit, you know, what I would describe like as a petty theft, right? You steal a Twix bar or two or a pair of socks at a Walmart because you're desperate. And then now suddenly you're a felon and the whole system looks down at you. But you can be Howard Lutnick and you can take your family to the known island of a registered sex offender and be the commerce secretary and face no consequences for that.
Yep.
And the way I've been framing this, and I'm going to tell you, like, John Ossoff's speech may have rewired my brain a little bit, because I've spent so much time in my career complaining about corrupt billionaires taking advantage of the vast majority of Americans. And that's still right. But I've changed my framing on this in its entirety. There are two classes of people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Epstein class and its defenders, which is all these MAGA influencers. Like, I don't know if you saw the thing with me and Clay Travis this week where like me and Isaiah Martin
embarrassed
out of him on Piers. But there's the Epstein class and there's everybody else. And so I'm letting all the ghosts of the past go away. I don't care of who you voted for in 24. I don't care who you voted for in 2016. Like, I don't want to fight with anybody about Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders anymore. I'm done with all of that stuff. And I'm going to reject anybody who wants to talk with me about it, because we need to break the Epstein class. Not just because they're preying on kids and they feel like they can get away with stuff, but the Epstein class is the same group of people who got away with crimes during the Wall Street financial crisis when they destroyed people's lives. Tens of millions of Americans lost their home and lost their jobs. It's the same group of people that Donald Trump cut taxes for in his budget bill last year while everything's getting more expensive. It's the same group of people on and on and on again that always win, no matter who's in power, Democrat or Republican, and they have to be beat, because we're never going to get back to a place where the average American family can buy a house and take care of their kids and take a goddamn vacation and retire on a single income, which is what should be happening. That's what was happening in the 50s and 60s. And what's amazing about Republican nostalgia to me is they're nostalgic for everything about the 50s except for a family being able to live on a single income. If we can't get back to that, I think this country will fall apart. And the way we have to do that is to break right through the Epstein class. And I'll work with anybody who stands up for that, whether it's Nancy Mace or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Thomas Massie, people who drive me crazy. Okay. They drive me crazy on politics, but I will work with them to break this class because they have got to go.
Yep.
And Suzanne in the comments says, get rid of Citizens United. She's absolutely right.
Very, very right there. I think that, as a young dude who sees a lot of my friends my age posting about the Epstein files and posting about the Epstein class, and now, you know, through our formative years, seeing that there is a huge divide in America in what you can get away with if you're a rich man in power, I think that this will be a breakthrough. I think that as generations shift and as you know, even like you're still incredibly young. Your generation isn't even fully in power. We're still ruled by people like twice your age, twice, three times, four times my age. So as
the average member of Congress is 68, Adam.
Yep, that is wild. And if you, I have a stat here. We live in Chicago. The average age of a voter in Chicago is 53, but the average population age is like 13, 14 years lower at 40 years old. So that means young people are systematically underrepresented in positions of power. But I think that this is a what do you call it? Like inertia breaker. Like this is going to break through in such a way where young people will flip their view and understand that we don't want these assholes in power. We don't want these people who, like Donald Trump as a role model, just from a broad view, is the worst role model that anybody could ask for. As a young person, you always want to be able to look up to the president for some sort of clarity, some sort of guidance. Biden provided that. Obama provided that. Trump is an absolute asshole, and his cabinet is full of people who are absolute assholes. I keep making this joke. Like, it feels like in order to be in the Trump admin, it's almost a prerequisite to be in the Epstein files at this point, because Elon Musk had a 120-day position and he was found out to be straight up lying. He said he rejected an invite to the island, but he was the one who asked to go, and Epstein was the one who just decided to back off and didn't arrange it. Howard Lutnick, of course, this is the big one. He said that he rejected going to the island, that he never talked to him again after 2005, would never let his family around this creep. Then we learn that after Epstein got this plea deal in 2008, Howard Lutnick still brought his entire family to Epstein's island in, was it 2012? Which is still 2011, 2012, which is still insane. Insane.
4 years after he became a registered sex offender.
Exactly. Brought his entire family. Okay, well, how about Donald Trump's new pick for the Fed chair? We found out that he was littered throughout the Epstein files. Is part of the resume when you apply for the Trump admin, like, was the 2020 election stolen? Are you in the Epstein files? And will you say yes to anything Trump? And it's, everyone is like, yes, yes, yes.
Yep. I think some of it has to do with, one, there's that class of people that support one another. And again, I can't emphasize this enough. There are a lot of Democrats in those files too. And I will burn the entire Democratic Party to the ground to get rid of anybody who had any relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, like the former White House senior counsel who resigned from Goldman Sachs. Was that yesterday or the day before? Like, I'm grateful to see some measure of accountability, although I find it awfully frustrating that the two most visible people in the United States that have been held accountable for Jeffrey Epstein's crimes are women, which is Ghislaine Maxwell. And I believe her name is Kathy, Kathy Rumler might have been her name, or Catherine. I apologize if I got that wrong. But it's all of these people. But I want to add a couple other names because I think it's important here.
Yeah.
Which is, who created the MAGA movement? It wasn't Donald Trump. It was Steve Bannon. And Steve Bannon is all over the Epstein files. He's the one who weaved together this group of different coalitions, QAnon and the MAGA base, or excuse me, like the Tea Party base, and turned it into this thing that it is. He's the one who got all of these influencers and content creators behind him. He's the inventor of like libs of TikTok and all this other stuff. It's partly why, I don't know if you follow, there's an X account called Cat Turd. And Cat Turd is very big, and the algorithm loves them, him, I think it's a guy, on Twitter. And he's turning on Steve Bannon right now. And I think it's partly because these guys are pissed that he's all over the Epstein files. So he's one of the linchpins that holds it all together. And as his power and influence wanes, I think it's important. And I want to add one more thing on Pam Bondi too, because earlier you brought up her TV ads where she was talking about, you know, taking on, you know, child sex predators and stuff like that. I think Pam Bondi has been full of shit this entire time, because in 2008, Alex Acosta made that sweetheart deal for Jeffrey Epstein that let him register as a sex offender, but basically carry on with his operations and face no serious jail time. It could have been stopped right then in 2008, and the damage would have been bad, but it wouldn't have grown to what it is today, where it's a international scandal at this point. But Pam Bondi didn't step in to stop that. Pam Bondi didn't speak out about it. And part of the reason I think Trump picked Pam Bondi was, first, because he couldn't get his first choice, who was Matt Gaetz, who is himself a pedophile and should be a registered sex offender for taking an underage girl across state lines to have sex with her. And by the way, paying for her braces so that he could have sex with her, which is like a bizarre story. She's like working at, it's a really sad story. She was like working at a McDonald's and he paid for her braces. It's just so, it's really gross. But like, but also because he can control her. So like, she has nowhere to run. And now all these people are just, he's got them all under his thumb now, so that they'll do whatever they want for proximity to power and corruption and money. And it's just, it's just disgusting. I feel like it's always ended by being, it's disgusting, but I have nothing else to say.
So I actually agree with your analysis on Pam Bondi. Absolutely. That is why Trump picked her, because he knew that she would cover up for this. I think it even goes deeper than that as well. Like, you pointed this out, but people forget that Mike Johnson isn't just covering up for the Epstein class, isn't just covering up the Epstein files. We didn't just have to put a discharge petition up to pry it out of his jaws. But a year ago, maybe a year or two ago, Representative Matt Gaetz from Florida had his investigation basically covered up by Mike Johnson, who was trying to not let the Oversight Committee release their report. There was a panel that was investigating Representative Matt Gaetz. They found some wild stuff at the DOJ. Mike Johnson was holding that, stopping that from releasing. So think about all these men from Florida. We have Donald Trump from Florida, who's clearly littered throughout the Epstein files. Jeffrey Epstein, littered throughout the Epstein files. Representative Matt Gaetz, too young to be in the Epstein files, but still created his own sort of network, as the investigation showed. And then even James Fishback, this gubernatorial candidate who is far, far right, has allegedly slept with some 17-year-old and got kicked out of some like teaching thing that he was doing when he was 30 years old. It's all absurd, and it's very clear which party prioritizes the children. But that is why they try to focus on all of these kind of misnomer issue. They try to talk about trans people or gay people and try to direct your attention over there. Because if you look at the Republican Party, if you look at the people within this party, the people in power, they're not beacons of let's say purity.
No, they're horrible people. And like, why do you think they went all in on Bad Bunny and his halftime show last week? It was to keep you distracted. And then, by the way, who did they pick to headline their halftime show? Kid Rock, who, much like Donald Trump in the 90s, spends a lot of time talking about having sex with underage girls. So these are just disgusting people who have no bottom, and they will protect one another. And I'm tired of it. Even like Nicki Minaj. Nicki Minaj is like their new plaything where they like to drag her out and be like, look how cool and pop culturally relevant the MAGA movement is now that Nicki Minaj is with us. But why is Nicki Minaj hanging out with Donald Trump? Well, one, she's on the verge of losing her $10 million mansion after losing a lawsuit. But two, her husband needs a pardon for having sex with an underage girl at knife point, I believe. And her brother is in prison right now for like 25 years for having sex with an underage girl. So she needs the Trump administration to step in to save her. And suddenly she's found her MAGA voice. Suddenly she's a part of the movement. So it is a group of people who are only self-interested. They are never going to put forward a solution that is going to improve your lives. And say what you will about the Democratic Party, it is a deeply flawed institution. It pisses me off, but it is the only party in America that gives a shit, one, about the Epstein files, but it is the only political party that cares whether you have a good paying job, you can take care of your family, you can send your kids to college, you can take a vacation, you can retire with dignity. And I'll take that over anything else, and I'll keep pushing them to be better when we win in 2026 and when we win in 2028.
Absolutely. And I just want to kind of wrap this up by talking about how much what you said right there is exactly how the Democrats need to be messaging. For the past decade, we've been unified around our opposition to Donald Trump, which is not hard to do. Trump is an absolute loon. I cover him every day, and it's important to cover him and make sure that everybody is aware of what he's saying. But the Democratic Party needs to, at some point, have our own forward-looking message, as you just laid out. For example, Micah and I, you know Micah Irfan. Yeah, we chatted a bit at your studio, actually. We had
dinner at the Italian restaurant.
Yeah, that was so great. That was such a good dinner as well, right after. So it's like we're laying out Project 2029, so to speak, where we want to make sure that dark money, special interest groups are blocked out of politics. We want to make sure that the 160 loopholes for billionaires are closed. These tax loopholes don't require us increasing taxes. They're not even a hard sell. It's just closing some of these loopholes to make sure we raise more revenue. We could raise an extra $1 trillion. And there's ways that we can sell our agenda to help the average American, but Democrats just need to be out there messaging. We have a lot of rising stars in the party right now. I really like lately, James Tallarico's campaign has been really, really great. He had a good ad that came out. John Ossoff, as we mentioned multiple times, amazing operator. J.B. Pritzker, the great governor of our state, really great. He's been talking about abolishing ICE. He's been talking about taxing people more. He's been really, really living up to the moment.
I agree. I mean, I'll also shout out. I think the two best federal candidates that I have gotten a chance to interview on the show. I'll be honest with everybody. I work with both of them too. But it's Mallory McMorrow, who was running for Senate in Michigan. I think she's an incredible young Democratic rising star taking on the establishment. And I think she's going to win that primary. And the other one is Paige Cognetti. And I encourage people to like go watch my interview with her if you get a chance, because she's the mayor of Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is my parents' hometown. So I've spent a lot of time there. And there used to be this very corrupt Democratic machine that basically dragged Scranton into the ground. Scranton is an old dying coal town, very famously parodied on The Office, right? For being a sort of like dead place to live. But she broke this political machine, ran as an independent, won, is now a Democrat, and she's taking on one of the most corrupt Republican members of Congress. And we need more fighters like that. And so when I think through what are the things that we need to succeed, we need the right messenger and we need the right strategy and we have to update our campaigns. Like you hear Democrats talk about that 90% of the time. But I think there's a big picture theme here. We need two things that people are going to see from the Democratic Party and that they're going to buy in and believe. And to me, it's we have to have the largest series of economically populist policies that the Democratic Party has put together since FDR was president of the United States, because that is how bad the economy is right now. And it's going to get even worse with AI and robotics, which are not going to go away. So we have to make sure that we create the conditions for people to have good paying jobs, but have a social safety net that protects them. Nobody goes bankrupt if they get sick. People can take care of their kids. People don't have to spend $30,000 sending their kids to daycare if we're going to require both parents in a family to work. We need to get really deep into that. We need to help people who are in the millennial class in particular, who are taking care of their aging parents and taking care of their kids, because it's completely screwed up. We need to forgive student loan debt and keep going. And then one final thought here too is the second half of that, and this is why I really like John Ossoff and the way that he's talking about it right now, is we have to run on the most aggressive anti-corruption platform that any political party has had since Teddy Roosevelt was president. So I'm doing a big Roosevelt thing right now, but we have to bust every single person. We got to break up these monopolies. We got to take down the Epstein class, and we got to deal with the rot inside the Democratic Party. There's a ton of insider trading inside the Democratic Party. The Republicans are worse, but we have to clean up our own house if people are going to take us seriously on corruption, because Trump gets points from the average American for his corruption because it's so brazen. They'll go, well, at least he's honest about it. You know, so-and-so on the Democratic Party side, they're not honest about it. And I don't agree with that, but like we have to deal with it ourselves, and we've got to deal with big money, and we might have to pack the Supreme Court. I think we have to do that stuff to fix this. So we got to be severe here.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I'm excited to see the ideological battle that plays out in the Democratic primary. It's going to be interesting. It's also worth mentioning AOC and Gavin Newsom were in Munich yesterday representing the United States in a way that Trump never could. AOC was very well spoken, as always, just amazingly cogent on her analysis of where politics in the United States is going. And Governor Newsom was, let's say, a knife fighter. He always goes and he is stern, assertive, and he really does a good job of matching the energy that Trump brings. He didn't bring knee pads this time, but he was giving some strong words. So I think we've got a lot of players in our party who are meeting the moment. We just have to continue to shape it in the way that we want. We are the voters. We have the power. We need to take the power away from the special interest groups. And
I agree. I thought AOC did an amazing job yesterday. And we have an abundance of candidates. And to me, the most important thing for 28 is that we have a big, messy, ideologically diverse Democratic primary, and we let the people decide. Because the two times we lost to Donald Trump, we didn't have big primaries. No knock on Hillary Clinton. I love her to death. But like her versus Bernie was not a full, vibrant primary. We should have had 12 people who were running to succeed Barack Obama at a serious level. It's good for the party, and let the people decide. That's what happened in 2007 and 2008. And we selected Barack Obama, who is by far, in my opinion, the best political talent that I have seen in my entire lifetime. So like, let's do that again and give a chance for somebody to rise up. Because right now, Newsom and AOC and a couple others, they're the front runners, but they might not be the nominee. I want to know if there's somebody out there who can rise to the moment, and I want to give them that chance.
Absolutely. I think Raphael Warnock from Georgia. A lot. He's an underdog. He's a, what do they call it? A hidden gem, or he's a dark horse. That's what they say.
Dark horse.
He's going to emerge. Yeah. I always use the framework. Like in 2006, if you asked who would be the nominee, most people in the Democratic Party would have been like, oh, I don't know, Hillary, maybe Obama. He gave a good speech.
John Edwards. That's what they would have said.
They would have said John Edwards. If you would have asked any Republican in 2014, who's going to be your nominee in 2016, nobody would have said Donald J. Trump. They probably would have been, I mean, maybe some of them would, but they would have been like Ted Cruz, maybe some of the Marco Rubio types. But Donald Trump ended up winning. You never know who's going to emerge. And I'm excited to see who does. And we get to sit here and continue to hopefully interview them, ask them hard-hitting questions, and guide the party in the direction that we want to guide it.
Yeah, every single Democratic candidate in 2026 or 2028 should have to appear on your YouTube channel.
Yeah,
if they don't, I ain't voting for them.
The Mike and Adam show, they should have to be grilled by both of us in different ways.
I love that.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.